All right, yeah, that's great. But where do you want me to put risk mitigation in the budget? What, next to competitive advantage?
Right.
Look, I know, we've got 2 weeks until the auditors come, and we have to figure out what to do with this data value exercise you got us into. Well, you're welcome, too. Look, I'll be back in the office tomorrow. Get Johnson and Masters and block the whole morning. All right. Okay, bye.
Hey there. I couldn't help but overhear you talking about data value.
Yeah, we got auditors coming next month, and apparently a speaker at CDO camp mentioned data value, and now we have to figure out how to account for it. Heck, nobody even knows how to quantify it or even identify it.
You sound frustrated.
I am. We've got a ton of data, I know that, but from there, who knows?
Well, maybe I can help. I'm Bob Twitt of the Acme Data Debt Collection Agency. Here's my card.
Well, good to meet you, Bob. What, data debt collection, you say? Debt isn't our problem.
I doubt that, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm pretty sure I can help you with your data value problem. You see, excuse me. Yeah. No, I'll take care of that one myself. Okay.
Anything wrong?
No. There's a company that just defaulted on a very large data debt. I'll be seeing them in a couple of weeks.
Can our data value be used to pay off data debt?
No, it doesn't work that way. But the things you do to generate data value are the same things you can do to prevent the data debt, and especially avoid accruing more data debt.
Well, now you're starting to sound like the IT data guys. All they talk about is data governance and data quality and all that ivory tower stuff. Now, they do make great PowerPoint presentations, but they just keep asking for resources, and I never see any benefit.
Or at least none that is being recognized and captured.
No, I'm pretty sure I'd recognize benefit if I saw it.
Well, look, I need to get to my gate, but I'll tell you what. Here, give me your phone. There's a podcast you need to listen to. I forget the name exactly. Something like the Rocky Data Bottom Feeders or something like that.
All right. Here you go.
All right, let's see. Ah, here it is. This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed. So, data value. Everybody talks about it. Everybody assumes they have it. But what about it from there? If only someone could figure out how to apply economics concepts to information.
Well, it turns out that someone has, and that someone is Doug Laney. He coined the term infonomics, wrote a book with the same title, and he's our guest today.
Great. Then let's get right to it.
We promise some candid talk with this podcast. Now, this is one of those talks. Do you know someone that seems to know everything? All families have their experts. Someone starts to talk at the party, and then they butt in with the answer. But the answer is, we need to do it like we did in the war. Or, this is the same thing that happened in '01, and we need to do XYZ. The solutions are strong on simile, strong on metaphor, and light on details, and high on intrusiveness, too. This happens all the time in the world of data right now. Data thought leaders come out and say data is an asset. It's important. Treat data like an asset. CEOs hear this and they say these things. And then they add, we need to listen to data, exploit data. This is the year of data. And they put that in the annual report. By the way, middle management says, I don't know what's going on. I just have work to do. It's easy to sound smart by spewing metaphors. All right, treat data like an asset. What does that mean? What's different? If someone says that, you need to be clear with yourself how far you want to take it. Put it on the balance sheet? Well, you really can't, but you can do a pro forma kind of thing. Treat it as a resource like people? Well, that means it's hard to furlough your data and make your data redundant, and you still have to pay attention to your data. Data as an asset does not fit into modern business management theory right now. Cost-cutting, mergers, focus on the next quarter, leveraged buyouts, foreign ownership. Unless you are an NGO or government, and then you have your own issues. and everyone strangled by the slow-turning cultures we have. Data, but truly, truly, data is the sole source of organic growth now, not cost-cutting. Not shrinking the size of your frozen burrito. Mr. and Mrs. CEO, you need to engage with this conversation in more than lip service. Data needs to be one of the four things on your desk, and stop listening to the CIO and authorizing tools and consultants. Learn a few new things. Wade in. Enjoy something that will actually organically make a difference versus the ho-hum stuff from the big colleges and talking heads. Madam Board Member, ask some hard questions. And yes, you can be nice in the process. It is my esteemed pleasure to introduce our guest and my pal, Doug Laney. Doug's a thought leader, consultant, advisor, author, speaker, and instructor on data and analytic strategies. He is the originator of the field of infonomics and author of the best-selling book. Yes, it is a best-selling book, Infonomics, How to Monetize, Manage, and Measure Information for Competitive Advantage. Doug currently consults with organizations and lectures at leading business schools on the topic of infonomics and data strategy. Doug was a vice president and distinguished analyst with Gartner's Chief Data Officer Practice and is a three-time recipient of Gartner's Annual Thought Leadership Award. Coolest, I think, of all, in 2001, he coined the three Vs of volume, velocity, and variety, which was about my dating life when I was young. No, it wasn't, Doug. It was about how do you do things with big data. And Doug, as we said, mentioned earlier, originated this field of infonomics, which is methods to quantify the value of your data and information and apply some asset management practices. He writes all kinds of stuff, Forbes magazine, Information magazine, Wall Street Journal, blah, 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 blah. Doug, welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Thanks, John. Well, don't let me stop you. Go on.
Hey, well, there's more. I had to edit the crap out of this thing. I mean, you've been a busy guy.
Yeah, I've just been thank you. I've just been riding your coattails for decades now. So appreciate everything that you've done to pave the way and make it easier for the rest of us.
Well, thank you so much. Doug and I have worked together in the past. We've had two or three areas where we've crossed paths before, mm-hmm. but I remember sitting in a room in a Mankey skyscraper in Chicago. And drawing on the whiteboard and you kicking around this idea of data as an asset and how would you value it and how would you do the numbers? And we had some good talks about that stuff. And it was, it was goosebump stuff, right? Because we knew, and then I was just sitting there going, watching you on a board. I'm like, man, no one's ever talked like this before. This is goosebump stuff. I guess the first question that pops into mind now is why should a CEO, CXO care about data monetization or data as a balance sheet kind of thing? I mean, it seems abstract, obviously. That's where it comes to mind. Yeah. But why should they care?
Well, I mean, one thing, we're in the midst of the data age, digital age or whatever, so they damn well should care. But I think, a lot of this goes back to the old adage. I don't remember who came up with it, but you can't manage what you don't measure, or you can't manage well what you don't measure well. And I think it also follows that you can't monetize or generate value from that which you don't manage well. And so for many organizations, this is a real vicious cycle of not measuring and therefore not managing and therefore not monetizing or putting data to work nearly as well as they can. And so, I think that would be important to every organization today.
Oh, I think for sure. Now, does it seem to you still that CEOs are looking for that data-driven miracle, that's where they're looking for the value? I mean, in the analytics bubble, I call it, 5 years ago or so, it was the algorithm's going to answer questions we've never asked. And everyone was like, yay, and spending money. Now they're doing it with AI, right? Mm-hmm. It seems to me that they need to go beyond that, right?
Beyond just generating new kinds of questions.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seems to be it's I call it the hula hoop thing. It's like, fear of missing out. It's the FOMO thing. It's, oh, well, yeah, we've got to jump on the bandwagon, this technology, and make some money like these other guys did. That doesn't, I
Yeah,
mean.
there's certainly some of that fear of missing out or being second in your or third in your industry to leverage data and AI in innovative ways. And we see this probably more in the vendor space where, if you're not claiming that your technology is AI based or has AI embedded in it somehow, then you're going to lose. Then you're going to be a loser, not just lose. So yeah, there's that. And we saw that in the early days of big data. If you didn't claim you were doing big data or have big data yada yada as part of your technology, then you were nobody.
Well, there's a whole book on this stuff, and heck, you wrote it. All right, but let's pretend I'm a CEO and you have 1 minute of my attention. It's the elevator ride, right? What do I need to know? And tell me, well, tell me what you would say, if someone says, "Hey, aren't you the guy that wrote that book on Infonomics?"
I would say I can guarantee and I can prove to you that your data is underperforming and you're squandering its value. You're not using it effectively or broadly enough internally. You're not generating value with it by sharing it or licensing it enough externally. And in many cases, it's probably costing you more to collect, store, manage, secure, govern your data than the value it's generating. But of course, you have no idea if that's the case because you don't measure your data as if it were an asset, even though it clearly meets the criteria of an asset. The other thing I would mention is that, people think they're clever calling data the new oil. And sure, at a macro level, it's a driver of the economy as much as oil has been over the past century. But data has these unique properties that oil doesn't have. It's doesn't deplete. You can use it multiple ways simultaneously. And typically, when you're using data, it generates more data. And the companies that are capitalizing on those unique economic characteristics of data are the ones that are thriving today, big time.
Yeah, and they are thriving. I mean, there are numbers there. It just popped in my head. It's not on our questions or anything, but what's the one number that I, thanks to you, I have used extensively with folks I've talked to? What was that? It's a ratio of some sort.
There's a ratio called Tobin's Q, which is basically a market value to tangible asset replacement cost. And what we found is that companies that are demonstrate certain kinds of behaviors, like they have a chief data officer or someone executive in charge of data assets or responsible for the organization's data assets. If they have an enterprise data governance function, and if they have a data science organization, those kinds of organizations, those are indicators that a organization is, serious about managing and leveraging their data as an asset. And those kinds of companies that demonstrate those behaviors have a market to book value ratio, this Tobin's Q, nearly 2 times higher than the market average. So even though the accounting profession hasn't come around to acknowledging data as an asset in most cases, although China now has, that investors definitely recognize organizations that are demonstrating these kinds of behaviors toward their data. And then look at,
Excellent.
how many oil companies today are in the Fortune top 10 versus decades ago. The most valuable companies today are data companies, although the press, for whatever reason, continues to call them tech companies, even though they're really data companies.
You have one of you have another one characteristic of data that I want you to mention it because I think it's cool, and it's connected to this oil thing if there's an oil spill, right?
It's you can clean it up. It's difficult, but you can clean it up. But if you spill your data, you can't clean it up. I don't think I'm the originator of that quip, but it's one I like to use.
That explains why I still want to get a hold of those photographs, but that's another story. Okay. Hey, you and I have a colleague named Randy Bean, and Randy's going to be on the pod here. And
Great.
he has
Love me
a
some Randy
survey.
Bean.
He has this great survey every year, and the data from this year was like big, huge jumps. What does that mean to you? It's like double the number of organizations are considering themselves data driven or trying to monetize their data. I'm not seeing it, but then again, maybe I'm not out there enough. Or okay, so what does this mean to you? What do you think of that? I'm asking
I don't see
all
a
kinds
big
of folks
jump.
Now.
Yeah, okay. I don't see a big jump year over year, but it is incremental. You know, there are definitely organizations that are starting to make more decisions based on data and analytics and AI instead of just on gut instinct. Certainly, as we see the next generation of digital natives, elevate themselves into positions of leadership and even executive roles, and then all these upstart organizations that are more data oriented.
Yeah.
I also see that operationally, organizations are automating things that were manual. So, but I don't know that there's a stepwise function here. I think it's just more incremental. I also think, and there are things that I see happening that are that are intrinsic, that are not explicit. Like data has really become the fifth factor of production. Centuries ago, folks like Adam Smith fixated on labor as the factor of production. And then in the early 20th century, there were some Swedish economists who identified the four factors of production: land, labor, capital, and entrepreneurship. And today we see data being a cheaper, faster, better substitute for each of these. We see just-in-time inventories and intelligent agricultural combines and irrigation reducing the need for land to generate the same amount of food. We see e-commerce, self-checkout, robotics, examples of using data and technology to reduce labor. Increasingly, data is being traded for goods and services instead of financial capital. Even the airlines at the beginning of COVID collateralized their customer data to secure billion-dollar loans.
Yeah,
and
lots
today
of money.
We're seeing data-driven AI models create, invent, and innovate things from new drugs to music.
We started our first episode of the podcast was me saying something similar. I'm using my collegiate Econ 101 view of things, which was land, labor, capital. And I think anthropologically, we have to add data to that list because it's, and we have a bunch of pods. And by the way, folks, that's at all your podcast outlets, like Spotify, like Apple, or counterthreadedproductions.com. Okay. How has this Infonomics stuff affected organizations' thinking? Are boards starting to kick this around? Give me any examples of that.
Our boards are always asking, what are you doing with big data? What are you doing with AI? They ask those kinds of questions. But I think the concept has really either frightened or compelled them to think of data as an asset, not just a byproduct or a resource. And then the use cases for data, I work day in and day out with organizations that want to do more with their data, whether they call it data monetization or commercialization or use case generation or data activation. I really don't care what you call it. But it's thinking beyond just using data for traditional reporting. Back in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, the focus was really on generating reports. And organizations today, still many of them generate thousands of reports and aren't really connecting that output to the processes within the organization. We talk a lot about using data not just to do hindsight-oriented analysis, but more foresight-oriented things like diagnosing things or predicting things or prescribing things or automating things. And this is where a lot of that shift is going. And maybe that's what Randy Bean's study is recognizing, that organizations are really moving away from a fixation on hindsight-oriented reporting to more foresight and actionable kinds of analytics.
What's the future of Infonomics? What's going to be happening in 5 years? What would you like to see?
You know, on one hand, nearly all upstart organizations are today born in digital, making full use of data, not just their own data, but collecting, compiling others' data as well to create products or enhance products. We've identified about a dozen different patterns of data monetization. And these, again, more upstart organizations are ones that are really embracing and leveraging data much more broadly. On the other hand, you've got these kind of stodgy old companies that definitely have pockets of interest and expertise, but still haven't made really the complete transition, you know, to becoming data-driven due to old school thinking and processes and, you know, inertia.
That's really awesome, Doug. Just one more here. What have organizations done, or what are people that like Infonomics within organizations doing to get support? What can those folks say to the people that are resisting, to the people say this is too abstract?
Yeah, one of the things we do is we'll work directly with the organization's CFO or financial team to understand both sides of the value equation. What is this data costing you versus what value is it generating? And how do we both reduce the denominator, the cost side of managing, leveraging, collecting data, governing data as well? And then how do we expand the numerator side to drive greater ROI and net benefits from data? And it's a simple equation. You know, the cost of data on the bottom, on the denominator, the value of data on the top. It's pretty simple math, and once you actually do those calculations, and yes, it involves, you know, a bit of art as well as science to do proper allocations. But that's really eye-opening for organizations, and it compels them, again, to both think about how to manage their data better as an asset by perhaps applying asset management principles and practices to their data, and expand the ways that they're generating value from data. Again, not just reporting on it or using it for a single purpose, but again, because data is this, as economists would call it, a non-rivalrous, non-depleting, progenitive asset. You can use it multiple ways simultaneously. It doesn't get used up when you use it. And typically when you do use data, it creates more data. So the organizations that are kind of embracing those ideas are the ones that are really thriving today. And, you know, yeah, data meets the criteria of an asset, you know, regardless what the accountants say. You know, can be owned and controlled, is exchangeable for cash, and generates what accountants call probable future economic benefit. And that's the criteria of an asset. And if you don't treat it like one, irrespective of what the accountants say, I think your company is going to get eaten alive by those who do.
I agree 110%.
Yep. Yeah.
Thanks, Doug. Before you go, we ask all our guests the same two questions. First of
all right,
name a person, alive or dead, that has influenced you heavily in your career. And it can be a non-data person that just said something practical, like brush your teeth every day or something like that.
Right.
All right.
Well,
so
I can't say John Ladley.
You could, but boy, that just sounds very, very.
It does. Even though you're not paying me that.
Not yet. Anyway, not yet. We have no budget.
Right. Let's give a shout out to the late Nobel laureate, Dr. Gary Becker, who, while working under famed economist Milton Friedman at the University of Chicago,
I love Milton. I love Milton Friedman.
Milton. So he devised this idea that managing and measuring people with the same or similar discipline as traditional assets was a way to drive more productivity from them. He actually coined the term and wrote the book called Human Capital. Now, of course, we know that human capital is not a balance sheet asset, thank goodness, you know, because you can't own humans any longer. But his ideas really stuck with me as I was developing the concept of Infonomics, which is, hey, let's apply this asset concept to this thing that generally is not considered an asset. And look what we can do now that we start thinking and behaving toward it as an actual asset.
That's very cool. I like that. Going to look that up.
Yeah, I tried to reach out to him before he passed away and never was able to connect. And I regret and lament that I didn't try harder.
Next question. If you had significant powers, if you were Harry Potter and could change one thing right now, with a command to make this world of data better, what would that be?
Can I use a bad word?
Sure, it's a podcast.
Put data on the balance sheet. And even if you don't want to wait for the accountants and the accounting profession to come around and acknowledge data as an asset, then create an internal balance sheet and income statement for your data assets. Then you'll see how they're performing or underperforming, you know, compared to other assets, and it'll drive all sorts of awesome behaviors.
Oh, and I can speak from experience. It does work when you do that. Doug, you'll be back for our fabulous game show, but thank you so much for your time. You are a busy dude. This has been great. This is goosebump territory again. This is awesome. Thank you very much, Doug Laney.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
And thanks to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros. All you need is hubris to sit back and watch the data value come pouring in. Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. I was listening to Doug Laney just now, and there's a lot of really great stuff in that interview, but I kept wondering when we were going to start getting into the numbers and actually calculate some data value. I'm ready to put pencil to paper, but how do I even begin? You can't pour out an ounce of data and look up today's spot price, and you can't log into Amazon or eBay and check out recent sales for data. Well, since Doug wrote the book, that's where I went looking for the answer. And I didn't find just one answer, I found six, each with a different perspective on modeling data value. The first three are foundational models that quantify information management discipline. Intrinsic value measures the data's correctness, completeness, and exclusivity. Business value measures the data's relevance, and performance value measures the impact of the data on key business drivers. The remaining three are financial models that evaluate the economic benefits of the data. Cost value measures the impact to the company of losing the data. Market value is the revenue the company could receive from selling the data. And economic value is the data's contribution to the bottom line. In the book, each is accompanied by equations and implementation details. It's awesome, and I finally had what I wanted. And then I realized that the absolute number isn't the important part. When it comes to maximizing any data value, you have to first maximize its intrinsic value. Put simply and very directly, data quality determines the ceiling on your potential financial benefit. It only makes sense. You're not going to be able to sell or to make good business decisions using bad data. So between now and next time, the one thing you can do is to identify the data with high business value and high performance value and make them the focus of your data quality efforts. The data with the greatest impact and relevance to your business needs to have the highest quality. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
Okay, going to move into the game show here. Pick a number between 1 and 10.
8.
Okay. Hang on. I am going to play this and then you get me your exact reaction. Ready? Okay.
Wow. I don't know. The song kind of was flowy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it made me think of the kind of the flow or the rhythm of data collection and creation and usage within organizations. But the song was also a bit playful.
Yeah.
And it made me think about how organizations should be playing around with their data to drive new ideas from it, not just, you know, like take it too seriously or do what others are doing. Be playful, be creative, be inventive, be innovative with your data. You know, it makes me also think I've collected over 1,000 real world examples of how data is being used and by and benefiting organizations around the world. And each one of those stories is music to my ears.
Oh, well, and you have a second book, right? What's the name of your second book? We haven't plugged that
yet. Second book is called Data Juice, And it is 101 real world stories of how organizations are generating value or squeezing value from data. And I picked 100 stories from among those 1,000 or so that I've collected. So I guess I have 10 more books to publish.
Well, Doug, thanks again so much. Thanks for playing the game. Thanks for being a guest on Rock Bottom Data Feed. And best wishes, and looking forward to hanging out with you real soon.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye. Come see us in Portugal.
Hey, bye-bye.
And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Do you know the value of your data? I mean, obviously it has some value, otherwise you wouldn't go to all the bother and expense of managing and using it. Is your data on your balance sheet? Probably not yet. Is your data as valuable as it could be? Well, that might be something to work on. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about data value, at our website, counterthreadedproductions.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter-Threaded production, copyright 2024, all rights reserved.